G'day sports fans, I'm back with another Sportsby Pod on Friday afternoon, gearing up for another fantastic weekend of footy. Crazy stuff going on in the NBA with only a few days left in the regular season and seeding starting to really matter for a lot of teams. So I'm going to spend a couple of minutes talking about the current play-in brackets and which teams are fighting to either stay out of the play-in or potentially remove themselves from that position. I'm not going to spend a lengthy amount of time talking footy. I did that on Wednesday's pod, but I'll run through a couple of fantasy tidbits and of course drop my sports bet for the weekend. Didn't go great last week, but I'm pretty confident about the three legs that I've included for your Friday, Saturday and Sunday matches. So let's not waste any more time and dig into the episode. Let's talk hoops. There's only two days of games remaining in the regular season. Obviously, every team has two games remaining and there's some squads out there that have nothing to play for. Seeding is locked in. They can't move from their spot. They're non-playoff teams, etc. But there are a couple of other teams out there that are fighting over these remaining few days to put themselves in the best possible position for the postseason. So we know that Boston's going to win the one seed in the East. After Denver, they didn't dominate, but after they beat Minnesota the other night, they're probably going to hold on to the one seed out West as well. So the two best teams in each conference, personally, I think, are going to hold the one seeds. And there's a little bit of scheduling stuff to unfold. I'll look in the West first. We know that Minnesota and OKC are tied at the moment in the second and third spots. I don't think it really matters for them, to be honest, who they want to draw in the playoffs. There's nothing too daunting coming out of the play-in. Personally, I don't think for those two squads. If we're looking at Minnesota, they've got a game against Phoenix and Atlanta still to come. And the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have had a fantastic season vaulting themselves up to this spot, have Dallas and the Milwaukee Bucks. So if you just look at those two matchups, I think that the Thunder could drop one of them and Minnesota might be able to win both and hold on to the two seed. But again, I don't think it really matters. The rest of the locked-in play-in bracket, playoff bracket out West is pretty similar as well. The Clippers in the four. Dallas clinched a playoff spot today and are sitting in the five seed with the New Orleans Pelicans a game ahead of Phoenix in the standings at the moment. So with two games to go, New Orleans would probably have to drop both of them to fall into the play-in and keep the Phoenix Suns out of the dreaded 7-10 bracket. But Phoenix have matchups, like I said, with Minnesota and Sacramento to come, and I think they're going to drop one of them. It feels like, given the way that their team's unfolded, shitty fourth quarter offense, a lot of things not going right for the Suns. If you didn't watch their game against the Clippers the other day, I think the score at one point was 30-4. Not great, Barb. So I don't expect the Phoenix Suns to get themselves out of the play-in mix, which means the Pelicans will probably hold on to their spot at six in the Western Conference. And remaining games for the Pels are the Lakers and the Warriors, two teams that might be fighting to help themselves out and push up to eight. Because as it stands right now, the Kings, Warriors, and Lakers are all tied at 45 wins and 35 losses for the 8, 9, and 10 seeds, respectively. So a two-game gap Phoenix has on those other three. So it seems like Phoenix is destined to finish as the 7 seed, but there could still be a little bit of jostling between the Lakers, Warriors, and Kings. So if I had a gun to my head and I was looking at which team I think's better, I think Golden State could get out of this tricky spot and move themselves up to 8 and play Phoenix in the first play-in game. They have a game against the Pelicans, as I mentioned, and Utah Jazz to come. The Lakers also have the Pels and the Memphis Grizzlies, so you'd think they're okay there. And the Sacramento Kings have the Suns and the Blazers. So essentially, the Kings hold the lead at the moment. They win out. They're going to be the 8th seed, but I would not be shocked if Golden State were able to pull off a somewhat upset, giving us pretty interesting matchups in the play-in bracket. It would be wicked, though, if they stayed at 9 and the Lakers stayed at 10, and then we've got a scenario where Steph is playing LeBron again in the play-in and the loser goes home. So fascinating stuff going on in the Western Conference. But like I said, most of the stuff is locked in. There's a lot more fluidity in the Eastern Conference standings. There's only a 3-game gap between the number 2 and the number 6 seed. Obviously, with two games to go, though, that's not going to dramatically shuffle. The Bucks, who are falling over the line in a heap. Giannis is now hurt. The poor buggers, they can't dodge a trick at the moment. But they've still got a couple of tougher matchups with Orlando and OKC to come. So they drop those two. That means that they're going to finish with a record of 49-33. The Knicks are only one game behind them as it stands right now at 48 wins next to their name. And they've got two matchups against very easy teams in the Brooklyn Nets and the Chicago Bulls. So we could see the Knicks leapfrog Milwaukee to steal the two seed. Orlando, we're trending in that direction. Only a couple of days ago, I thought they might have been able to shock the world and win the two seed, but As we all know, currently the 7-seed Philadelphia 76ers is, if they get through the first play-in, obviously, are the expected opponents for the number 2 seed. So if you're Milwaukee and you're able to fall to 3 and dodge potentially the Sixers, that does sound appealing. However, Philadelphia can still work their way out of the play-in. They're one game behind the Pacers and the Magic. Cleveland squashed in the middle at the 4 seed at the moment. And effectively, Indiana has Cleveland, I think, on the last day of the regular season off the dome. So that'll be interesting to see if they're able to get that win. Cleveland also has the Charlotte Hornets, so you'd expect them to take care of business there. And the Pacers have Atlanta as well. So Indiana wins out. They hold on to their spot in the top 6. Similar with the Orlando Magic, who, like I said, are kind of fumbling over the line a bit themselves. They have a matchup against the Sixers, which could essentially determine who gets that 6 spot and who gets the 7 seed. So a couple of very interesting games coming up as well. They've got the Bucks, as I mentioned. So Orlando versus Milwaukee and then Orlando versus Philadelphia could have a lot to say about how these standings fall out. Of course, Cleveland and Indiana on the last day potentially as well. So the 76ers, I've still got a bit of confidence in them. I know Joel's banged up, but like I said, their team that they've built around Joel Embiid, I think, is better than when he was initially hurt. So yeah, tough scenario if you win the 2 seed in a conference and you end up drawing Philly in the first round. But they'll have to get past Miami, who are locked in pretty much to the 8 spot at the moment. They're only one game behind Philadelphia, but considering the fact that the Sixers play the Magic and then Brooklyn, I can't see them losing both of those games. Maybe Orlando gets a surprising dub there, but the Miami Heat have 2 games against the Raptors that they should definitely win. And it seems like that first play-in game in the East is going to be the Sixers versus the Heat, or maybe the Pacers versus the Heat if Indiana fumbles a bit. But locked into the 9 and 10, we have Chicago and Atlanta. Trae Young's back for the Hawks, which is nice, cool. I don't think either of these teams are going to be doing a shitload of playoff talking, though. If I'm looking at it, and maybe the Sixers get out of the play-in mix, you got Indiana, Miami, Chicago, Atlanta. It's pretty interesting to try and pick the 2 teams or forecast who's going to get out of that spot. I still have faith that Indiana will hold on to the 6th seed. Philly will win the first play-in, which means we'll probably get Atlanta playing Miami for the 8. That sounds about right. But Chicago have had some moments and might be able to shock the world and get over the Atlanta Hawks and then defeat Miami or the 76ers as well. So as I mentioned, 2 days left of 15 game slates. It's very convenient working as a teacher that I'm on school holidays for a couple more days, because I will be locked into those matchups as the craziness ensues over the final days of the regular season. There's not tons to talk about from a genuine footy standpoint. We saw Brisbane get a much needed WR last night against the D's. Pretty interesting game of footy, but I'll be honest, I didn't tune into a shitload of it. Tonight's game, though, I'm very intrigued to see how it unfolds. We've got the Doggies and the Dons. And for fantasy coaches, this is a very relevant game. We've got players like Nick Martin, Marcus Bontempelli, even throw in like a Harvey Gallagher there, Tim English. I'm probably blanking on Zach Merritt, of course. There's a couple of other players, especially for draft coaches, who might be somewhat relevant. And it seems like, with the roof on at Marvel, that this could be a points factory. Now, if you're a smart fantasy coach and you like winning and a good rank, you probably had the VC on Gorn last night. I had it on him all week and then got a bit fancy and shuffled around and forgot to throw it back on him before this game. So I missed out on Gorney's massive score. And if you're one of those coaches in a similar position, it's not a terrible play to VC someone in this game. The most logical choice, obviously, is Marcus Bontempelli. He was fantastic last week against Geelong, dominated with 10 tackles and 35 touches off the dome. But I think that against Essendon, like I said, under the roof, it's very possible that Bont has another big 130 performance in him. Zach Merritt is probably the second best option, but surprised that there's not a shitload of fantasy coaches that have him out there. He sat at my M1 for most of the preseason, and I toggled and chopped and changed my structure, so it meant that I couldn't afford him, but his ownership's under 11%. But if you're a Zach Merritt owner, you would have no issues putting the VC on him, averaging 123 this season, if you don't mind. But my VC for tonight, I'm going rogue, and it's part of the reason why I didn't lock it in on Maxi Gorn, is Nick Martin. Now, I did not expect Max Gorn to come out and get 140+, which is part of the reason why I thought I would roll with Nick Martin. But like I said, his time on ground this year is massive and there should be a lot of points up for grabs. He's taken at least, call it like 6 or 7 marks in most of his games. I think that Nick Martin has the capability to run out there and get 30, 35 touches maybe. It would be great to see. And obviously I'm trying to manifest half of it. But when I fall back to a captain, if Nick Martin fails, which could happen, he might just get 100, a low 100 or a 90 or even worse. But I don't want to put that bad juju out there in the universe. I think I'm going to go with Jack Steele, but it does worry me that he's playing against GWS, who are a little bit tougher to score against traditionally. And playing at Manuka Oval doesn't fill me instill me with a lot of confidence, I will admit. We know that Jack Steele's a gun, though. He's a dominant possession machine at the moment, laying a shitload of tackles. So I'm hoping he gets to 120 without too much fuss. But I'm seriously contemplating putting the C on Sam Flanders. On debut against the Hawks, it would not shock me if he came out and had 125 plus. So a couple of VC things to think about there. I think I will back in Nick Martin. I don't think I've got the kahunas at this point to try and captain Sam Flanders. But I do love the Rolls-Royce tactic that JLo and I often implore. You know, bloke coming in for his first game in your team, you put the C on him with confidence. And I think against the Hawks, Sam Flanders could do wonderful, wonderful things. But as it stands right now, like I said, he's coming into my side for Jimmy Jordan. And I was tossing up all week over a tough, tough trade decision. I could either flick Nick Dacos and bring in Harry Sheezel because I've got the cash to do that. Or I can go the long-term play and trade out someone like Blake Howes to Sam Closey. And I looked a little bit at the matchup for North Melbourne against against Geelong at GMHBA Stadium. I still think Sheezel is going to be a fantastic player and probably the D1 is trending towards that direction at the moment. But the last time he went down and played in Geelong, he dropped an ugly 50. So that just scared me off slightly, I will admit. I think that Flanders is a fantastic player and one of the ones that, you know, you don't need to overthink a lot of stuff when it comes to picking him. But considering he's gone down to GMHBA before and only scored a 52, maybe we see another dud score from him and Geelong really roll over North Melbourne. I actually think that North will put up a bit more of a fight than people are giving him credit for in this game. But yeah, I was a little bit precarious over how many points Sheezel would score. And I think locking in Sam Closey for Blake Howes was probably the most popular trade of the week. So I went down that route as well. Howes managed to score a 68 last night, but I'm not going to lose too much sleep over that. It leaves me with 253K in the bank as well, so that hopefully next week I can generate either another one up, one down, or pocket a boatload of cash to then try and grab a gun midfielder in round 7 when the DPPs kick in. So those are a little bit of my trade thoughts. A lot of coaches going in one direction, obviously Closey being brought in by about 27% of coaches at the moment, and Sam Flanders not super far behind him with a lot of coaches obviously jumping on. There's some that already have him in their squad, but 10,000 other coaches have opted to trade for him this week. But the second most traded in player at the moment is Charlie, straight out of Comben, who, I'll be honest, I don't love it. I've thought a little bit about this, and given it's the best of 18 rounds, you can hide a little bit behind his score, and there's definitely cash gen on offer with a -3 break even, but I don't really want to bring him in and then have to worry about addressing him as a trade as well when I get back to round 7, because I don't think I'd have a lot of confidence fielding him moving forward. He was on the Dylan Friends podcast earlier this week. It's possible he gets the Tom Hawkins matchup, but he was also saying how surprised he was to get 25 touches, and he doesn't do that very often, obviously, as a key defender. Laid 5 tackles as well against Brisbane, so I honestly reckon he's going to come out and score half of what he scored last week at 107. So I can see why coaches are doing it as a bit of a cash grab. And again, you can hide behind it a little bit given it's best of 18 rounds. But for me, I'm not a Charlie Comben man. Will Graham is the other most traded in player at the moment. The Gold Coast Suns defender mid, he's about exactly the same price as Closey. Oh, actually, there might be a slight difference. Anyway, I think that Graham's role last week was really promising. And that's part of the reason why I jumped on him over Closey, as I've spoken about at length. But I am a little bit concerned that he could be a sub-risk. Dave Swallow, hopefully, for Bodie Ewland will be the perfect sub-pattern. And if that's the case, then Graham may be able to score another 60 to 65 points, which would be fine. Might not be in the best 18 scorers if things go according to plan this weekend. But yeah, we'll have to watch this space. A lot of eyes will be on that Hawthorn Suns game for sure. And that rolls into the sports bet of the week. I've tried to, like I say, make each of these legs for the multi around even money. And I'm going to pick one and do this moving forward from Friday, Saturday and Sunday's slate of games. So my favorite bet at the moment this week is to actually get on the Dockers for a dub at 340, but it's too rich for the multi. So tonight I'm backing in Harvey Gallagher to be an anytime goal scorer. $1.87 is what that'll set you back. If you combine that with a couple of other legs, it could be quite juicy. We've seen Harvey Gallagher kick 4 goals already in his 4 games this season. He's only gone goalless once, and I think, like I said, there'll be a lot of points on offer against Essendon under the roof tonight. So I'm backing Harvey in to hit the scoreboard. And then I'm going to think that Adelaide will put up a bit of a fight against Carlton. I can't see them winning this game, but the Carlton 1-39 odds at $2.12 actually intrigues me. I think, like I said, the Crows, they've got to like show some fucking signs of life, right? Like, I did not predict them to be sitting 0-4 this far through the season. I don't think a lot of coaches would have said that as well. And a matchup against Carlton is a bit trickier, but they have played some tougher teams in their defence. They had the D's last week, obviously, Freo, Geelong and Gold Coast before that. So Carlton might be the Premiership's favourites at the moment, but I think Adelaide have to show something and a bit of pride in this match. So as a result, I think they'll be able to keep it close, but I'm still backing Carlton in to get the dub. So Carlton 1-39 is my Saturday leg. And then on Sunday, I'm backing in Shea Bolton. Part of the reason why I'm picking Shea Bolton for this is because I don't think I'll be able to trade him in. I thought long and hard about it last week and then wasn't able to finally pull the trigger. And he does have around 6 buy, so that does concern you slightly. But when it comes to dominating a game of footy, we know that Shea Bolton can do that. He's kicked at least 2 goals in his last 3 games, but to kick 2 snags is only paying $1.47, which isn't a great amount of value on offer, to be honest. So it's very possible he doesn't kick a lot of snags in this match, but I am backing him in to get 25 touches, which is a nice $2.12 as well. So he only had 19 last week, but he did have 25 the week before that and has gone over 20 pretty regularly in the past. So you combine those 3 legs together, it gives you a nice juicy $8.12. So hopefully we can get a Harvey Gallagher goal, Carlton 1-39, and Shea Bolton and 25 touches. That's the multi that I'll be throwing down this week. Probably have a little sprinkle on each leg individually as well, just to make sure that if one of them fails, then I've still got a little bit of a fallback. But remember to always gamble responsibly. And that's the Quickfire Sportsby Pod for Friday. Like I said, I won't be doing a lot today because there's footy to be watched and coaches want to get this into their ears. So good luck for round 5 over the weekend, fantasy coaches out there. I'll be back on Monday with a little bit more of my useless stats from the games that unfold. Hopefully the large fries and Coke can go well and Nick Martin can have 3,000 fantasy points tonight. That would be great. As always, appreciate you listening though. I'll catch you next time.